It's brand new, season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast, Climbing in Heels, is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone was like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The world is full of magic and wonder, if you know where to look. And I'm obsessed with looking for it. I'm Simon Sinek, and I host a podcast called A Bit of Optimism. Each week, I have a short conversation with someone who inspires me or teaches me something about life, leadership, and other curious things. I hope you'll join me on the journey. Listen to A Bit of Optimism on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. Welcome to Math and Magic, Stories from the Frontiers of Marketing. This week, I'm talking to the one and only Ryan Seacrest.
Love the connection to people. I think at the core, what I get excited about, what gets me up in the morning, is connecting with people in an unscripted, unvarnished way. It's getting to say something to them, hear back from them, know that I'm part of the routine, and I look forward to getting on the air. I look forward to it.
In these exciting times, we're looking to the math, the strategy and analytics, and the magic, the creative spark, more than ever. Listen to Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places. Welcome to Forward Thinking.
Hey there, welcome to Forward Thinking, the podcast that looks at the future and says, Yoshimi, they don't believe me, but you won't let those robots defeat me. I'm Jonathan Strickland.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum, and I was hoping that you would use Yoshimi Battles the Pink Robots quote for this particular episode.
Yeah, from the flaming lips. I'm so pleased you recognized where that came from.
I think this is like the third time that's happened in the entirety of the, what, like 2 or 3 years we've been recording.
I think when I used maps once, you got that one.
Yeah.
To be fair, my musical references are different than Lauren and Joe's musical references.
That is generally true.
Yeah.
Speaking of Joe, he is not with us today, as you probably guessed from the fact that he did not chime in. Joe McCormick, our third co-host, will be back very soon.
Right.
In the meanwhile, if you couldn't tell, we're talking more about robots.
Yeah, we mentioned in our last episode that we were having a duo robot conversation this week. And in fact, this topic that we're going to talk about today, robot security guards, was a suggestion from Joe himself.
Yes.
And so we hope to do justice to the topic, Joe, and we look forward to you being back in the studio very soon. So let's talk about robots and security guards and robot security guards.
Yes, because, well, okay, we've talked many times on the show before about the amazing and sometimes strange ways in which robots are taking over traditionally human work, the type of human work that frankly just stinks.
Right.
You know, work that's physically hard or repetitive or dangerous or just boring.
Yeah, and all of those things are detrimental to a person's sense of self-worth. They can affect job satisfaction. Like if your job ends up devolving into something that is repetitively dangerous, obviously that can have a profound effect on you.
Stress, either physical or emotional or both.
And even if it's just dull, if it's just boring and repetitive, then that can have an effect on you as well, a big negative impact.
Absolutely. And, okay, so security. Why is security this type of a field, this type of field in which we would potentially want to get robots into? Some background factoids on security. According to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, there were about 1 million human security guards employed around the United States as of 2015. They generally make about $12 or $13 an hour on average, patrolling and monitoring premises for suspicious behavior and crime. Mm-hmm. And they're important because even in this world of ours that is increasingly rigged with security cameras everywhere, security guards, you know, having a physical person with a physical presence can absolutely be a deterrent to crime.
Right. I mean, a camera might deter a criminal. It might not. And if the criminal has decided to go ahead and commit said crime, perhaps they've got a mask on or something. They feel fairly confident that the camera's not going to be able to figure out their identity.
Oh, sure.
What's the camera going to do?
Not a whole lot.
Just record.
Just going to record stuff like it usually does. The same thing it does every night, Pinky. Yeah. And furthermore, as we know from every heist movie ever, cameras are really easy to trick.
Yes.
And very entertaining in the ways that you can come up with to do so. So, okay. This job is important. Mm-hmm. But it is not an ideal job. It is dangerous by nature to put your soft and fleshy body in the way of a person who's desperate or determined enough to steal or destroy property.
Mm-hmm.
And furthermore, it can just be lonely and boring, and patrolling an area over and over again isn't really fun.
Yeah, so it's already fitting. Two of the three D's that are often cited as work that is ideal for robots and not for humans. That would be the dangerous and dull. But depending upon where you're doing your security gig, you might even hit the third D, which is dirty. Dirty meaning not just like, oh, that place is poorly maintained, but it may be that we're talking about security guards for areas like where there might be hazardous waste and you don't want people wandering into that place.
Slomping on through that, yeah.
But then you put a human being in danger by placing that person in close proximity with those hazardous materials. So what's the solution?
Why not put some robots there?
Robots! So here's the thing. Lauren went out and started looking at this crazy, crazy company that has a security robot that's been active for a couple years now, particularly over in the Silicon Valley area.
Uh-huh.
But recently, we saw some news coming out because Uber has started to use one or maybe two of these robots at one of their lots.
Right, yeah. We were inspired by this news story, and so we wanted to look in to this startup called Nightscope.
Which is an awesome name.
Yeah, Knight is in like the stabby, like armored human,
right.
Kind of. Not
like
Knight.
Monty
is in
Python the Holy Grail style.
Yeah. Not the nighttime.
Night. No, not nighttime.
Not the dark thing. Yeah. Okay, so in 2013, this startup in Mountain View, California.
Home of Google
and et cetera. Started designing this robot that they call the K5. And what they eventually brought to market is a 5'3", 300-pound, shiny white doom egg.
Yeah, that's a good way of describing it. It is conical, not comical. Although I guess depending on what happens to it, that also could be the case.
That's true.
But conical in shape and 300 pounds, I mean, this is not a lightweight.
Yeah, I mean, I am 5'3", y'all, for reference. and the idea, I'm thinking that I could easily, like, ride one of these like a doom egg pony.
Yeah.
But I probably shouldn't.
Yeah, it might start making noise, but we'll talk about that in a second.
Yeah. Okay. So these things are outfitted with just a whole lot of sensors. You've got four high definition cameras in there that give it 360 degree vision. You've got a license plate recognition camera, four microphones, a thermal camera, a laser rangefinder, GPS, and a weather sensor, or an environment sensor, really, you should say, that can monitor the temperature, the barometric pressure, and carbon dioxide levels in the area. So What all of this does is help it find its way around, watch any humans that are in the area, detect fires.
Very important.
Uh-huh. Watch for license plates for potential troublemakers, like recently fired employees or like a car that seems to be casing the joint, something like that, mm-hmm. and et cetera. It also has Wi-Fi capacity so that it can communicate with fellow security bots and also with human personnel who are either remote or on the site, but not, you know, like poking it.
Right, not walking.
Not literally
walking
right next
step
to it.
By step yeah. with the robot.
Furthermore, like Roombas, they know when they're running out of juice and can go head back over to their recharge station.
Now, what is interesting to me beyond the technology here, which is already impressive, this idea,
yeah.
you know, it seems fairly comprehensive for your basic guarding type of duties. I mean, mm-hmm. you're talking about some surveillance, some recording, patrolling.
Uh-huh.
Is that Nightscope's come up with a clever means for generating revenue? They're not, like, obviously these robots have to be mega super expensive.
Oh, yeah.
But they're not just saying, hey, come look at our catalog and you see this $85,000 robot? How many would you like to order?
Yeah. No, they have a rental business model.
Mm-hmm.
So the official company line in how much they cost to rent is that you should totally speak with a sales representative to find out a plan that works best for you.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But news reports have listed it at about $7 per robot per hour, or about $60,000 a year for 24/7 surveillance.
Right. So if you think, $7 per hour for a robot, like, that's probably less than what you would pay a human person.
And in fact, according to averages, it is.
So in that case, you've got Nightscope having a sales pitch saying, well, if your needs don't require an actual human being to be there
all the time,
then perhaps this robot would be a way that not only could you maintain security at your space, but you could save money in the process.
Yeah, and under this kind of concept, they are in use by a few tech companies around the Silicon Valley area, like Qualcomm and Uber we mentioned.
Yep.
And they were certainly in use for a demonstration at Microsoft. I'm not sure if they
actually
kept
been
them
put in there
or not. Yeah.
Well, what's interesting to me is when I started doing research on this, I kept coming up with articles from different time periods, like 2 years apart. They were like, and every time it was like people had just discovered them.
Right.
Right.
Like, and I had only seen them right now too.
Right.
So, and I read a lot about robots on the internet. I'm like, how did I miss this? They're glorious.
To be fair, even people in Silicon Valley have missed it, because every time there's another report about these robots being put in place by someone, it's like, this is amazing. It's brand new. Happened 2 years ago.
There's a hashtag on Instagram.
Yeah.
That is hashtag security robot, by the way, if you'd like to look it up and see some pictures and videos of it interacting with humans. So let's say that you rent a few of these. How do you set it up? How does it know where to patrol?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you lead it around with a wireless controller to help it build out a basic map of its patrol route.
That makes sense. Cause it
Which sounds adorable.
It wouldn't magically have the information stored in its databanks. It has to learn, clearly.
Sure.
So yeah, it's kind of like taking an employee on a tour.
Right, exactly. You know? Just your giant metal employee.
Well, and the other neat thing is, because it's a machine, it doesn't forget unless its memory gets corrupted. So
exactly,
it will always remember where everything is.
Yeah, and so and by observing its surroundings, it starts to learn, you know, where it can and cannot roll.
Right.
Because it is a rolling machine, not a walking machine.
So you can defeat the security robot by...
with a short curb.
Exactly. Just a slight ledge. It's kind of got the classic Dalek weakness. Although,
yeah.
I know. I know that today they can fly, but back in the day they couldn't.
Oh, no. And the first time that a Dalek said elevate and went up some stairs, I was terrified. I was genuinely upset. Spoiler alert for first season of Doctor Who reboot.
Yeah, season 9, I guess, of the technically, but whatever.
At any rate, so you lead it around to show it where it can and cannot go. It will start building up its own personal database of its surroundings there. And furthermore, you can program in GPS coordinates to give it like an outline of like a fence almost.
Yeah. So it's like an invisible fence that the mm-hmm. robot's not going to go beyond.
Right.
All right. So, I've decided to rent my security, my RoboCop.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, your move, creep. No, wait. No, I put them out there patrolling the area that we have determined. Let's say that it detects something hinky is going on. What happens next?
Not a hinky thing. Anything but a hinky thing.
Yeah.
It phones home. And by home, I mean whatever humans are on the security team at that current moment. You can have it alert different people during different shifts, and anyone who gets an alert can tune into a live stream of what the bot is seeing and hearing.
Okay, so in other words, whether it's you've got a team that's on site, but they are... Maybe they're overseeing the entire area. Like, if you're talking about a really big area, you might have multiple robots on different floors of a building, for example.
Oh, absolutely. Or you might even have, I imagine, like a larger security call center that's servicing many different robots over different businesses.
Right. That would make sense. And you would have certain teams assigned to specific robots, and therefore you would get that notification.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. Let's say that we've got the security robot clearly... This is something that's meant to interact with human beings, whether it's someone that needs help or it's someone who's doing something they shouldn't be doing. So how does the robot actually perform those interactions? Does it just like say like, please don't do that?
Or... Well, yeah, because on the ground level, you know, like it's going to phone home if it senses a problem, but it's the humans in the security team that are going to actually choose what happens. Like basically, the robot disengages.
Gotcha.
Essentially, the robot is programmed to not interact with humans.
Mm.
I mean, it's which is a strange feature because, and I think that the team put really quite a lot of research and development into the physical design and the response design of this robot to make it this object that can interact when it has to, but that really isn't meant to.
Yeah, so it's not interfering with someone. It's not intimidating someone who is perhaps just there under normal circumstances, or perhaps
right.
they need help and they're coming to the robot to get help, and because the robot actually can communicate back to the home
base. There's a button for that. If you need help, you can push a button.
Yeah, it's essentially an emergency call button.
Yeah, exactly.
So you don't want to design your robot to look like, like the Cuisinart Killbot 2000 with spinning saw blades all over it.
Yeah. You're not going to go up to that kind of robot for help. I mean, also...
No, you're going to run from that robot screaming help.
Yes. Furthermore, if your kid wanders up to it, that's bad time.
That's
probably
bad,
for the bad child.
Bad hug for kid. Yeah. Don't want... No.
So you know, you want it to make it intimidating enough to deter crime, but you don't want to make it unfriendly.
Right.
You know, cute enough that it doesn't scare people, but not so cute that people are twistedly willing and or motivated to mess with it.
Oh, man.
As we have seen before in studies of human-robot interaction. Like remember that hitchhiking robot?
The one that successfully got all the way across Canada and then maybe 2 days into the United States before it was stolen and disassembled?
Decapitated?
Yeah.
Good job, Pennsylvania.
That tells you so much about the different cultures of Canada and the United States.
There was also a study in Japan in 2014 of how people would interact with a robot that was designed to help the elderly shop.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, good robot. Kids messed with it. Even, and perhaps because it was saying things like, somebody help me, or ouch, that hurts. But I imagine in Japanese.
There is... something tragically comical about a robot crying out saying, somebody help me.
I know, right?
Because you know it's not really feeling anything.
Yeah, it's not in pain, and that kind of makes it funny, and that kind of makes you want to mess with it more.
I mean, I'm a softie, so I have a feeling that I would totally feel empathy for such a machine, but I can also see the perverse appeal of messing with it further.
Oh, right, yeah, there's some really... interesting and probably terrible psychology at work here. So the team, it seems like, was aiming to make the K5 like clearly inhuman, like clearly a robot and not attempting to tug on your heartstrings.
Right. It doesn't have big puppy dog eyes.
No. It
doesn't have
nothing
fur.
Nothing like that. Yeah. But also obviously autonomous and obviously intelligent.
Right.
So if it's approached by a human person, It will turn to watch you with all of its big front sensors, because it kind of has a front and a back. If you corner it, it will stop moving. Just I'm pretty boring anyway. Why would you want to mess with me?
I'm 300 pounds. Where are you going to, like, come on.
What are you going to do?
Stop.
If you keep it cornered or if you start poking at it, it will chirp at you and also phone home like a low-level alert, like, hey.
And then you could actually have a person say something like, hey, knock it off. We can see you.
Yeah. Oh, and if you try to mess with it, it'll sound an actual alarm, like not like a friendly like, hey, but more like a.
Yeah, more like imagine the worst fire alarm you've heard at the loudest level, something akin to that.
Yeah,
because I have seen it described as ear piercing.
Yes. So then that will send like an official alert to the team managing it, and the team managing it can, I'm pretty sure, like I wasn't clear, but it sounds like you think that this is the case, that the team can like speak to you through the robot.
I mean, if you have a help button, I would imagine you have to have some sort of communication back, or else all it would do is have like an elevated sense of this button is doing nothing. And we just peek behind the curtain. Lauren wrote and I recorded an episode of Brain Stuff about placebo buttons. That's one case where you don't want a placebo button.
No.
If it's an emergency call, you want a real effective button.
Yeah, that would be very, very upsetting.
So my guess is, while I didn't see anything specifically.
It has to.
Yeah. Common sense would dictate there has to be some sort of speaker through which people could talk.
Yeah.
And I would imagine that that would become useful both in a security feature where you say, "Hi, you're under surveillance. Don't do that.
Yeah.
Go
Stop
away.
It.
Or
Leave.
we heard you. We're sending police or ambulance or whatever the emergency might be to your location right now.
Yeah.
And we'll stay on the phone with you. That kind of stuff.
Yeah. But there's also a list of things that it will absolutely not do.
Yeah, it won't physically interact with a person. It's not gonna roll up and be like, "Hey, back off, dude."
Yeah, it's not
I
gonna,
like that you immediately
it's
went
not, it's
with
not
the.
Gonna, it's not gonna front at.
Yeah, like, you immediately did the universal fronting, like hold me back,
come
hold me
at
back.
Me, bro.
Yeah, that's not gonna do that. The closest you will get to any sort of physical interaction is that alarm, which is powerful enough for you to perhaps, and sound is technically a physical phenomenon.
Sure.
So I guess by then you could say that's how it gets physical with you, but it doesn't like it doesn't have a little zapper that comes out a la R2-D2.
No, it's not weaponized in any way.
Yeah.
We'll
talk more about that one in just a moment.
It's not going to mess with you back.
Right.
I'm delighted by the existence of this thing. A little bit creeped out. You know, the fact that it can look me right in my beady eyes. You know, I'm not entirely sure how I feel about that. Also, the fact that one of the owners of the company or one of the creators of the robot in one interview said, like, it's the absolute minimum height that it could be in order to look around a parking lot. And I was like, absolute minimum.
You can't be any shorter, Lauren. You will be lost in every parking lot. One of the things that makes me think about is that, on the one hand, like, you get into the discussion about, yes, this is taking a job that is not the greatest job for a human being. But on the other hand, you're like, well, there are human beings who are depending upon jobs like these in order to make a living.
Sure.
So there's two sides
there's
of that
a balance
coin.
There, yeah.
You would hope to be able to come up with a means, and it's beyond the scope of Nightscope. It's beyond their scope to come up with the means, but you would hope you could come up with some way of getting those people who would otherwise be out of a job into a different line of work or some other related field so that they could continue to make a living and contribute to society while also not being put in physical harm or in a situation that's going to be soul sapping because it's so dull and repetitive.
Right, right.
The robot's not going to care.
No.
So
it's up to us to care.
Yeah. Also, I like the idea of a robot being able to record everything perfectly, like with video and audio. Once upon a time, Lauren, before I worked at How Stuff Works,
yes,
by about 10 years, I had a temp job working for a private security firm.
Oh, okay.
My job was to transcribe security officer reports.
Oh, my goodness.
Handwritten reports so that they could be filed in the computer system. And that was not the best or most rewarding job I've ever had. The people who were working there were perfectly earnest and hardworking, and I give all the credit to them. They were not writers. And sometimes deciphering what they were writing, not just like physically deciphering what a word was, but trying to figure out what they meant. I'll have to tell you the story of Cookie after this podcast. I'd tell it now, but it would be such a huge tangent that it'd be a waste of time. So I'll tell you afterward.
All right.
But you wouldn't have to worry about that because the robot would be recording everything.
Right.
So
yeah, that, having that level of data and having a continual stream of that data at a certain point becomes a little bit of a big data problem.
Yeah.
But is probably a good problem that many companies would love to have.
Well, especially if you have to pursue a legal claim against someone because you're not relying upon an eyewitness account or a security person's account of what happened.
Or a stationary camera's footage.
Right,
or
where you might not have a good view. You've got a 360-degree view, a mobile view, because it can move to wherever the problem is or somewhere where it has a better line of sight of where a problem might be, and have a recording of that thing. That is incredibly valuable, well beyond like an eyewitness account, which we know is not entirely or even largely reliable.
Or scientifically, absolutely. But this Nightscope K5 is not the only security bot out there.
No, I found a couple of others. There's the Avatar 3 security robot from Robotex. That's T-E-X for the end of that word. But it's 24.41 inches by 15.35 inches by 6.14 inches, which is about 62 by 39 by 15.6 centimeters. So, a little bit more than 2 feet long, a little bit more than a foot tall.
It's and bigger than a bread box, but not
half
much.
A foot wide. Yeah. And it looks like a little tread robot. Like it's got treads to propel it. So it doesn't have it's got wheels, but wheels to turn the tread. So two treads, kind of like a tank. It's got a little kind of glass dome on the top that has all the cameras and sensors on it and a pole for an antenna to connect to Wi-Fi. This one is under manual control. It's not intended to be autonomous, but it would allow someone to patrol an area without having to leave their nice air-conditioned security room, for example.
Or to check out a situation that could potentially be dangerous.
If it's something where, you know, maybe someone spotted a box and you're like, well, let's get a closer look before we call in any authorities.
A bomb squad, yeah.
Yeah, because it may just be that, oh, someone accidentally set their stuff down while loading things into a car and then drove off forgetting it.
Yes.
Or it could be that
it's clearly a package of ramen.
Yeah. Then let's not call the SWAT team. It's a little different. It's not like the K5 and that's, you know, the K5 being semi-autonomous, mostly autonomous really. Mm-hmm. But then you have the Anbot, A-N-B-O-T from China. Now this one is a little shorter and about half the weight of the K5. It's 1.5 meters tall, which is about 5 feet, and weighs 78 kilograms or about 172 pounds. It's also cone-shaped. In fact, it looks a lot like the K5.
Yeah.
To the point where I start to wonder if this is one of those cases where one person maybe possibly copied down an idea someone else had. It could very well be that these are parallel forms of development that have nothing in connection with each other.
Happens frequently.
Remarkably similar designs, however. To the point where when I looked at the first picture, I thought, well, why do they have a picture of the K5 on here? And then I was like, wait, that's not the K5. That's the actual Anbot. It is meant to patrol areas prone to civil unrest, according to Newsweek at any rate. And it is autonomous in that it can patrol an area, it has obstacle avoidance technology, and it is able to go back to a recharging point and recharge itself. But it is also, quote, equipped with weapons. Although, to be fair, those weapons must be manually operated by someone, so it's not like the robot just decides to hit you.
Yeah. That's a much better option.
Someone controlling the robot has decided to hit you.
I guess depending upon who's controlling the robot.
The weapon, by the way, is an electrically charged riot control tool, so essentially like a stun gun or a cattle prod, something along those lines. So it is like the zapper from R2-D2 popping out and giving someone a jolt of electricity.
Huh.
But if that ever does happen to you, if you are ever zapped by an Anbot, it's because somebody controlling it doesn't like you or doesn't like what you're doing.
Yes.
It's not because the robot didn't like you.
Decided to.
Yeah. Unless the robot's malfunctioning in some way. Like if you see an Anbot in China and there's a little protrusion extending from it and sparks are coming off, just walk the other way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't run into that wand.
You don't need to go in that direction anymore. There are other places. China's big. There's a lot of stuff to see.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, I thought that was interesting. But there are, of course, tons of robots that sort of fall into the spectrum of security bot. But most of them are really not meant to be security robots. They are robots that have features on them that can be part of a security system. Typically, we're talking about cameras. Mm-hmm. So vacuum robots that happen to have a camera on them. Well, they don't necessarily need the camera for doing the vacuum job, but it allows you to go through an app and see what's going on in your house while the vacuum robot is active. And it acts as sort of a surveillance camera.
Yeah.
So really, it's not so much a security robot. It's more like just a webcam.
Well, it's a robot that does. Yeah.
It's on the light end.
It's in the spectrum.
Yeah.
Sure.
But this is just where we are now. Where are we going? This is forward thinking. We got to think about the future.
Like we were saying earlier, this could potentially, if we follow this out into having full fledged security robots,
yeah,
we're gonna have to deal with a job deficiency. Mm-hmm. And Nightscope says themselves that robots like the K5 are not intended to replace human security guards, certainly not yet, but rather to keep them out of harm's way as much as possible and to arm them with better data about the environment that they're guarding.
Mm-hmm.
But what if we do create
robots that are sufficient enough
to
replace humans.
Human staff?
Like they have the features that will allow them to do a security guard's job without the need for the human element, the home team. Yeah.
Right. Nothing to make the decisions or to come out and zap people themselves.
It'd be tough. Tough for many, many reasons. One of the big ones that we've said in other episodes, there are some things that humans can do really well, like naturally well. You learn how to do it as a kid and you do it for the rest of your life.
And you just get it done, yeah.
And robots are not good at those things. So, for example, the K5 isn't really great at staying upright on uneven ground. There was one article I read where they talked about, as they were chatting with a representative, in the background, they saw a K5 get too close to the edge of like a curb,
mm-hmm,
and tilt over.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have arms. It can't
push itself back up.
It can't. Yeah. So then you have to pick up a 300-pound robot and put it back on its base. Not necessarily easy to do. And the DARPA robot challenge that we talked about in a previous episode.
Oh, yeah. The best people in the world
working on robots that can do a multitude of tasks,
uh-huh, are still pretty crap at making robots that can walk around.
Yeah, like that. It's hard to make a robot that can climb stairs or open a door and step through. Things that most people find, you know, at least if not effortless, at least not so challenging that it's impossible.
Yeah.
Right? But there are robots that literally, like, you can watch that video clip of the robot fails of the DARPA challenge, and usually it's set to Yakety Sax, which makes it hilarious and also sad at the same time. And but it's crazy to see the little things that robots just find incredibly challenging. And when you start to think about it, you realize, yeah, replicating what humans can do, creating a machine that can operate within a human world, mm-hmm, a world that we have shaped.
Yeah, that we able-bodied, more or less average-sized humans have shaped.
Right. It is not easy to do that. So also we have to point out, security guards would likely need at minimum the basic skills of a typical able-bodied human, and maybe more than what just a typical person would be capable of doing, depending upon the type of security guard and the type of gig.
Right. And plus, in addition to that, if you don't have that team of people that it can phone home to in order to make decisions for it, you need the capacity to autonomously decide when someone's a threat, how much of a threat they are, and then how to stop them.
Right.
Computers only just learned how to identify cats.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how long it's going to take us to get to a design of that level of decision making and intelligence.
Until I can encounter a robot that not only knows what cats are, but can tell you don't go see the show Cats. It's really not that great.
And furthermore, don't scritch its belly immediately.
Don't scritch a cat's. Yeah,
it's
like
a trap.
There are a lot of subtle things,
cat
I think.
Rules.
Exactly. That if a robot isn't able to tell me what those are, I'm not going to trust it to be guarding something of supreme importance.
Yes.
Especially in a way that is
responsible. Or
even
mediocre importance.
Right. At least in a way that's not going to hurt somebody, right?
Right.
Which brings us to the next point, the idea of security guards occasionally have to use some form of force in order to protect a person or protect property.
Yeah. We would be talking about designing a robot to physically incapacitate humans.
Yeah.
And instinctively, that seems bad.
I mean,
at the very least, like, potentially hazardous and litigious.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, that goes back to our discussion from European Union.
Right.
And liability. Who's liable? Well, if you got a security robot zapping people, I mean, even if they've done something wrong.
Right.
There's some liability issues there. And it does seem to go against those laws of robotics we talked about in our last episode.
Right. Do not harm humans.
Yeah. That's a big one. It's right there. It's number one, in fact.
Yep.
Number one.
The rest of them are kind of all based on number one.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah. And
all
so.
All waterfalls from there.
Exactly. So, and again, these aren't laws that robots are born with, but these are the sort of ideas we've had of saying, if we're going to go down the road of building robots, we probably want to make sure they're not going to hurt us.
Yes.
That seems like a pretty wise thing to build into them.
Yeah. Well, and I do think that part of that intrinsic instinctive sense that we have about creating robots that could hurt people is based in science fiction.
Yeah.
It is based in all of the fun, explodey movies that we see where Arnold Schwarzenegger has a metal skeleton and he's stomping around and terrifying the living daylights out of everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And all of that kind of stuff that is so far away from being any kind of reality, even if you do create a security robot that can zap people. That robot is not Arnold Schwarzenegger. It probably doesn't even have an Austrian accent. I can't be positive. I don't know what they're up to in China.
Kind of want them all to have it now.
but you know, it's the idea of a robot running amok. It is pretty unlikely.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah. I mean, it's yeah. We have a ways to go before that becomes
before,
a true concern.
Before Paul McCartney bot is a reality.
Right.
Yeah.
That's a callback.
Yeah. but okay. So I don't know. You know. It's like if you're really just designing something like this to prevent crime, which is bad,
mm-hmm.
crime is bad.
Yeah.
And if it's a robot that's really good at making decisions and it definitely super never kills or maims anyone accidentally or on purpose, those would both be that would also fall into the realm of bad.
Yeah.
If all of that is true, then it would be a good thing to have a security robot, right?
So we just need a robot that can have, like, a whole bunch of arms. And it just very
just
gently hugs
you.
The criminal and holds the criminal there.
Like,
all the arms are soft. So as the criminal is struggling to get away, he or she is not actually hurting him or herself.
Right.
And yet can't get away. Because the robot also weighs, like, 700 pounds.
Like, right, sure.
Just, like, just a giant panda robot is what I'm imagining. that can hug a criminal into submission.
Yes, I approve of this plan.
I will pitch this series
Nightscope,
to Sci-Fi.
Nightscope, call us.
Yeah.
If
we can get this on, if we can get this on Sci-Fi, I think we got a future in science fiction programming.
No. I mean, if we could create this panda security bot, you know, it means fewer humans being exposed to risky situations, which is always kind of one of those like golden standards of how robots will do us good,
right,
in the incredible
right.
future.
Yeah. So there's definitely a place for it. The question is to what extent. I think the K5 is a great implementation of mm-hmm. this because it is taking what appears to be a very responsible approach to incorporating robots into the realm of security, without causing, at least initially anyway, at least in no obvious way, risk to
harm
other people.
Harm or danger.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I can't wait to revisit this topic in like 10 years and talk about, remember our innocent days when the robots were being friendly? And
when we thought the panda robots were a great plan.
The other day I went and buy myself a Soylent Green bar and was a little slow reaching for my money. And, well, that's why I got the cybernetic leg now.
Coming up next, we're going to talk about the future of Soylent Green. This episode brought to you by Soylent. No, I mean, that's. I'm hoping that's not going to be the way this show is in 10 years, but we'll find out. Maybe.
So that would be a really interesting accent for you to spontaneously develop.
Well, it may be one of those that's mandated by our robotic overlords. Like,
okay.
Jonathan, you have to have a weird cartoonish accent for the rest of your life, at least when you're on microphone. Yeah. All right, so guys, if you have any comments about this episode or robots in general or even just some other topic that you want to know, like what is that going to be like in the future, write to us. Let us know what you think. We want to hear from you. You can send us an email. The address is fwthinking@howstuffworks.com. Or you can drop us a line on Twitter or Facebook. We are FWThinking on Twitter. Or you can search FWThinking on Facebook. Our profile will pop up. You can leave us a message and we will talk to you again really soon.
For more on this topic and the future of technology, visit forwardthinking.com. Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places.
It's brand new season 2. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedatum. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast Climbing in Heels is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, The Story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, The Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The world is full of magic and wonder, if you know where to look. And I'm obsessed with looking for it. I'm Simon Sinek, and I host a podcast called A Bit of Optimism. Each week, I have a short conversation with someone who inspires me or teaches me something about life, leadership, and other curious things. I hope you'll join me on the journey. Listen to A Bit of Optimism on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. Welcome to Math and Magic, stories from the frontiers of marketing. This week, I'm talking to the one and only Ryan Seacrest.
Love the connection to people. I think at the core, what I get excited about, what gets me up in the morning, is connecting with people in an unscripted, unvarnished way. It's getting to say something to them, hear back from them, know that I'm part of the routine, and I look forward to getting on the air. I look forward to it.
In these exciting times, we're looking to the math, the strategy and analytics, and the magic, the creative spark, more than ever. Listen to Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.